Hare Krishna. So we welcome all of you for this Sunday feast lecture today and commemorating this holy month of the Gita Jayanti. We are having a series of talks on the five philosophical truths of Bhagavad Gita, five tattvas of Bhagavad Gita, as you can see on the slide there. So this is the second in the series of talks. Last week we had the discussion on the first topic, which is entitled the Ishvara Tattva, or the Supreme Lord. Today we'll try to understand the Jiva Tattva. It is our journey within, trying to discover who we really are, right? So before we move ahead, just a little prelude. We all know that the entire substance of the Vedas, the essence of the Vedas, is encapsulated in this one small book called as a Bhagavad Gita. Just in the 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita, the entire Vedic wisdom is like a little zip file. It's all captured in the Bhagavad Gita. Now the Vedas, as we know, they are a source of all knowledge. Veda itself, the very meaning of the word Veda means knowledge. So knowledge, can we define a boundary to knowledge? Can we just say that only this is knowledge? That only what is written in these pages is knowledge? Or only what is happening in India is knowledge? Only which is happening within the temple hall is knowledge? We cannot really define a boundary to what is knowledge. So if knowledge itself is boundless, and if Gita contains all of that, just in 700, can you imagine this book here contains everything, right? So that should make us really think that what is everything? What can include everything, right? So this is how the Vedic scientists would think, right? What we call as metaphysicists or scholars would think, the Vedantists, how they would think. They would look at the entire world through just one lens. Now here I'll ask all of you a question. So you can think carefully and answer. What do you think are the things that we deal with every day in our daily life? Everything. You know, you can just think of anything and everything that you deal with. Right now it's a big hall. So we'll have to moderate how the answers come out. So let's start from this side. Gadgets. iPhones. Right? They have become indispensable part of our life. Okay, good. Anybody else from this corner? Sorry? The body, okay? Another gadget that we deal with. The original gadget that we've been dealing with, okay? Somebody from this side? Anything that you interact with every day? Decisions! We have to make varieties of decisions. Yes, thank you. You had an answer? The five elements. Okay, we are getting a little philosophical here. Let's keep it simple. Okay, but I'll take your answer. We'll revisit your answer. Yes, anything else that we daily deal with?
Flowers.
Hanji?
Flowers.
Yes, flowers are one thing. Good.
Regular routine.
Our daily routine, right? We have a schedule, we have to deal with a lot of things. Okay, somebody from back of that room there, that side. Food, right? Everybody has to deal with it. Life itself is something that we have to deal with. Okay, good. Emotions, yes.
Money,
yes. The hot topic. What an irony, it had to come from this corner here. But okay. Spot on. That's the hot topic of discussion today. Everybody's talking about money, currency and...
Relating, connecting,
some kind of interaction is what you're meaning? Okay, good. How? Yeah.
Ourself.
Worshipping, okay, now that is another dimension now. Somebody from the back of the room. Something that we deal with every day. Anything that you deal with. relatives, friends, the environment, good, the mind, somebody from that end of the room to the right side of Srila Prabhupada. Anything that we are dealing with. Questions. Okay, he's putting the question back to me. Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. Yes, I accept your answer, which is a question. Okay. Travel. We have to travel, right? These are, okay. Now, there's a whole wide range of answers that we just got. Right? Now, how do you put all of this in one book? Well, looking at it from the solution point of view is right, but there is the interesting, this is what is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. Right? You'll appreciate the whole perspective of Bhagavad Gita. We can classify all of this into different categories. Now, practically, all the answers that you gave, from currency to travel to flowers, to different kind of objects that you all mentioned, gadgets and so on and so forth, the Bhagavad Gita puts all of them into one category, one box, which we call as Prakriti. Prakriti basically means material nature, right? We all know in our different languages we have this word Prakriti. It means the same thing even in the language of Bhagavad Gita, the material nature. All the objects, things that we interact with. Some of you mentioned about the mind and the emotions, desires, questions. That's also an interaction happening in the realm of Prakriti. And some of you mentioned about interaction with other people, relatives, friends, right? Now that is a different category. It is not exactly the Prakriti category, but it's a slightly different category, which is called as Jiva, which is our subject matter today, right? Now, these two are, if you notice, they are pretty much on the same plane in the graphic right now. The Jiva and Prakriti, they are both in the same plane, because Bhagavad Gita explains that both of these categories cannot exist independently. And I'm surprised that in our little Q&A here, we didn't come up with one very important thing that we interact with every day. Something close to it came from this side, but I was hoping of a very direct answer. Ishwar. Right? Now, these are the three fundamental truths in nature. Everything that you interact with is just these three boxes, these three categories. Ishwara, Jivas, that's you and me, all of us, and Prakriti. All of these, right? But Bhagavad Gita doesn't stop there. It goes on to explain that each of these are also interlinked. And there is a very fine connection between these things. Because it describes that the Ishwara, now here is an interesting, you know, thought for all of you. If we said that Ishwara, the literal meaning of the word Ishwar means controller, right? So when you talk of a controller controlling this whole Prakriti, this whole creation, then the controller has to be there, right? Can you imagine? I mean, today we are talking of driverless cars and, you know, Google coming up with a driverless car, but if you follow the news, you know, they are also running into accidents. The first driverless car ran into an accident. Now they are rethinking the whole strategy. But basically there is a controller. The controller has to be present somewhere or the other. So do you see any controller here in the material world? Do you see Ishwar? Let's put it simple. People ask you sometimes, ask us sometimes, everyone. Where is Ishwar? Right? Well, Bhagavad Gita explains, yes. For the naive eye, Ishwar is there in his unmanifested form, which Bhagavad Gita calls as avyakta rupa, as an unmanifested form, in the form of time, which is called kala. It is this time which is running the whole show. In one of our future, if you keep joining us every Sunday, one of our future talks will be on this topic also. And The jiva and prakriti are also linked. There is a very strong connection which is kind of like binding literally the jiva to this prakriti, which we popularly know as karma. Right? So, these five fundamental truths are the main subject matter of the Bhagavad Gita. So, today we'll try to think, I mean you could go on a whole day just discussing this one graphic that you are seeing here, but we'll try to discuss more about what this jiva exactly is, right? So, the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, Lord Krishna, he describes, Bhumi rapah analo vayur kham manor buddhi evacha ahankara ityame bhinna prakritir ashtada. He talks about 8 different categories, 8 different components of this one category which he calls as the prakriti. Remember, we saw earlier, prakriti. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. The Pancha Mahabhutas, as one of you rightly pointed out here, right? Where are you? Where's the one who gave the answer? Oh, there you go. Yes, right? As you rightly pointed out. The Pancha Mahabhutas, yes. Practically all of this that we are seeing around is comprising of these 5 components. Adding to that, there is the mind, which is kind of like our subtle existence, right? You really can't touch and feel it, but it is there. You know it, right? The mind, the intellect, and at the foundation of all of this, what is known as ahankar, which is a false ego. Right? These are the components of what Krishna says, my material energy or the prakriti. And after describing this, the next verse, which is of very relevance for us today, he says, apareyam itastvanyas prakritim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabhaho yayedam dharayate jagat. Besides these 8 categories that we just heard, Krishna is describing here that there is a superior energy of mind. Right? Interestingly, jiva is also an energy. Just like how we said earth, water, fire, air, ether, iPhone, roads, gadgets, they are all energies. The jiva is also an energy. Then one may question, what makes it so different then, if it is in the same category? It says it is a superior energy. It is, the others are called inferior energies, lesser form of energies, whereas this is a superior energy. Right? But what makes it so superior? The power of consciousness. That we are sentient beings, we are cognizant beings, we can interact with these things. Right? Fire and air don't interact with each other. Like you never say fire saying, hello Mr. Air, how are you today? Right? But you and I like to say that, yes? Hello Prabhu, how are you today? We say that. So that power of being sentient, being conscious, is what that really makes us, us. That what really makes us who we really are. The jiva shakti. Right? But here comes a little catch. Now that I know I can interact with things, I can do more than just say hello to all of you. I can touch things, I can feel things, I can lift things, I can control things to a certain extent, but still I can control. And that puts me in a big trap, where Lord Krishna says, which comprises of the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this inferior material nature. Dharayate jagat. So this here is a definition from the 7th chapter, 5th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna, Lord Krishna is defining our acquired nature. This is not our true nature. This is a acquired nature where we think we are the master and controller of everything that we survey, as Srila Prabhupada likes to put it. Right? So this jiva, in its acquired nature, it thinks that I can control things, I can possess things, I am the master, I am the boss. Right? And consequently, what do? We try to boss over with varieties of actions. Everything that you see every day, you walk around, you know, just walk on the streets, you'll just see people doing different varieties of activities. You know, trying to involve themselves in a whole range of activities, all for that one purpose. Trying to achieve some kind of fulfillment in life, some kind of completion. Right? Interestingly, remember in our that little graphic earlier, the triangle earlier, we used the word karma. That which binds the jiva and the prakriti is called karma. One of our acharyas, he defines this word karma, a very interesting definition, very profound definition. Listen carefully. He says, karma is nothing but the action by the incomplete to achieve a sense of completeness. I repeat. An action by the incomplete to achieve a sense of completeness. Or to put it in our modern language, the sense of inner fulfillment. Right? We are all constantly working hard at every step to achieve that kind of fulfillment, that kind of happiness. Right? Anybody not doing so? None. Everybody, right from, in fact, Bhagavad Gita explains, right from a bacteria to the topmost living entities, the most advanced civilizations on this universe, all of them are just working hard just for this one purpose, to achieve a sense of inner fulfillment. But what happens in the process? Manashashtani indriyani prakritisthani karshati. Karshan, we have this word in Hindi also, right? Karshan, karshan is like struggle, sangharsh. The word sangharsh, that root is from this Sanskrit karshan. Sangharsh is happening at every moment in our life, right? Whether you want it or not, sangharsh comes upon us, right? Anybody here working hard for miseries in life? Right? You know, if somebody raises your hand, you don't belong here then. You should be in some other place. Right? So yes, whether you want it or not, whether you like it or not, this sangharsh comes. This karshan happens in life. We have to struggle. But in the first two lines, Lord Krishna here is revealing to us not our acquired nature, but our actual identity. What is our actual identity? Mameivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Then he describes that mama eva amsha. You are my part and parcel. The jiva is my part and parcel. While describing the other eight elements, Krishna says, this is like inferior external energy. He's like disowning them literally. Right? But when he's talking about you and me, when he's talking about the jiva, Krishna here is calling it as mameva amsha. Mera hi amsha hai. You know, when the word eva or he, when it comes, it's like a very special emphasis. So Krishna is owning us. Right? He's not abandoning us like those eight, he's not disowning us like those eight other external elements, but he's owning us. Mameva amsha. Right? So that is the kind of like this secret message is there in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is revealing that we are his part and parcel. So Srila Prabhupada emphasizes this point very nicely, saying that because Krishna is talking about mameva amsha, we are also like Krishna in our identity. So what is Krishna's identity then like? That brings about another question. So the Shastras describe that Krishna, His beautiful form, his beautiful nature is made of, is described through three very wonderful characteristics known as Sat, Chit and Ananda. Right? We all heard this. It's one of the very popular terms that we hear in the Hindu philosophy. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Right? So, likewise, we are also, the Jiva, its nature also is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Sat, Chit and Ananda. Right? Sat means eternal permanence, a sense of continuum. We don't like change. Right? Anybody here likes change? You may think change is a good thing, right? Variety is a spice of life. That is how the whole advertisement industry works. It tries to create new products every day. It tries to create newer and newer gadgets every day. Right? We are not happy with the same version of iPhone. We want iPhone 4, iPhone 5, iPhone 6, now iPhone 7. Next year, the anniversary edition, iPhone 8. We want change. But think about it. Actually, we don't like change. Right? And imagine you go home, you go back from work, you go home every day, and the people that you are interacting with keep changing. Right? The person whom you think is your best friend, right, suddenly their likes and dislikes change all of a sudden. Right? Or the person that you are married to, their whole mood changes. Would you like to live in a relationship like that? Imagine the currency that you are using keeps changing. Right? So we don't like change. We like a sense of permanence. Right? Because that is who we really are. And the biggest thing that changes our existence is the phenomena of death. That is why deep down within our heart, somewhere in our existence, we hate death. We don't like death. Why? Because it changes our whole identity. The biggest change in our existence, in our conditioned existence, comes about with the phenomena of death. That's why nobody likes death. Right? That's why we like, because that is our true nature of Sat. Chit, Chit really means knowledge, cognizance, awareness, right? Anybody here likes to remain ignorant? None, right? I mean, even if a little sound would come right behind the door, immediately you start thinking, what do you think would be happening there? We like to be aware of things around us, right? Everybody is trying to know things. And if you look at the whole development of science and technology today, is nothing but a manifestation of this chit desire that we have, that potency that we have. We want to know more and more. We want to know what lies beyond our dimensions of knowledge. We want to know beyond, more and more. We want to stretch our scope of knowing. Right? Where is that urge coming from? It is coming from our original true nature of being chit, being knowledgeful. We don't like ignorance. But all this permanence, this continuum, this eternality and knowledge attains real fulfillment when we realize our third very important attribute, which is ananda. Every one of us ultimately is looking for this ananda, this bliss. That is the only motivation for everything that is happening around us. Whether you know it or not, everything that is happening in the world. People are fighting, hoping to get ananda. People are partying, hoping to get ananda. People are flying, hoping to get ananda. People are running, hoping to get ananda. People are working, hoping to get ananda. That hope for bliss is what that drives the human nature. That what is driving not just humans, but every living entity on this, in this universe. Right? So, realizing this three attributes of ours as Sat, Chit, Ananda is what really knowing ourselves really means. Understanding this Jiva, what this Jiva is, understanding our true nature is nothing but understanding these three attributes of ours as the Sat, Chit and Ananda. But therefore, Bhagavad Gita, it begins right in the second chapter. It begins by explaining how this Jiva is not just these different phases of bodies that we acquire, but rather we are that original Sat, Chit and Ananda, the spirit soul, the Jivatma, that imperishable spirit soul. That is our real identity. And that knowledge forms this Atma Tattva Gyan, as Bhagavad Gita presents it. This Atma Tattva Gyan is the foundation of any spiritual science. You really cannot truly call yourself a spiritualist if you are not rooted in this understanding of Atma Tattva Gyan. Right? That's what you will hear Srila Prabhupada. You pick up any lecture of Srila Prabhupada, he would emphasize repeatedly on this body. You are not this body, you are the spirit soul. You are not this body, you are the spirit soul. Right? So the whole foundation of spiritual knowledge, the whole foundation of the Bhagavad Gita rests on this identity that how we are not this body, but rather we are caretakers of this body. And our whole life is a journey. Yantra Rudhani Maya. The body is described to be like a machine. Right? Like a car. Srila Prabhupada many times he would give this analogy of a car. Right? So this, we are on this highway of life. On this journey. Using this body. And we are the caretakers of this body. And by using this body, we are trying to achieve a certain goal. That's our journey that we are on. Right? And where is that journey culminating to? In discovering our real self. Discovering the real you. That is our whole. So spirituality is not some outer worldly, you know, practice. It is not about levitating, or it's not about standing upside down, or it's not about developing a halo around you so you don't have to use a torchlight anymore. Right? But spirituality, the most fundamental essence is about just discovering this nature of ours, the jiva tattva, our true nature, realizing our real self. Right? So that is who we really are. Sat, Chit and Ananda. We are a jolly, happy soul. Right? Now, it sounds nice, but in reality, many of you may contest this argument. Many of you may question this argument. Are we really jolly, happy soul? That really doesn't sound... It sounds nice to... It's good if it happens like that. But factually, this is how we are. Not so jolly, not so happy. Soul, body, maybe, maybe not. Right? So that brings us about to a very important discussion in this phase of our lecture, that why are we so sad? Right? Why that frown face that we carry everywhere around? If we, in our true nature is to be happy, if our true nature is Satchit and Ananda, why are we so full of Nirananda, Nirash? Right? So the scriptures explain our conditioned nature, our acquired nature, our whole existence here in this material world is like a state of amnesia. You all know what amnesia is? Isika yaddash kho jata hai, loss of memory. Right? So, a very important part of us we've forgotten. So our whole existence in the material world is like we've acquired some false identity and we're just thinking we are somebody else and we're just living our life. And that false identity is what that is bringing us that sense of sadness. Now, the real problem that lies before us is how do you then treat this amnesia? How do we treat this memory loss? Right? So at this stage, I want all of you to think deep from one of the most popular sources of spiritual wisdom that is there in India. A source which has, a source of knowledge which has penetrated deep into the Indian culture, that it has become the first and probably the ultimate source of wisdom for all the masses in India. Which is? No, not rituals. Temples? No, not temples. I wish it was temples. This source of wisdom, which is our benchmark, as they say, if it is there in this source, it has to be true. And that is what we call Bollywood. Right? As the saying goes, if it's in Bollywood, then it's right. Now, based on your Bollywood gyan, I know you all have lots of it, right? Based on your Bollywood gyan, how do you treat amnesia? How do you, like, you know, you all know the storyline, what happens. Toying, somebody gets hit on the head, or, you know, somebody meets an accident and they lose their memory. How do you revive their memory? Try to remind their previous things, okay? And anything else? Shock treatment, right? See, we have, still the memories are very strong from Bollywood, right? Like I said, it is the source of our wisdom, right? Yes, so based on our Bollywood gyan, we know that these are the two techniques in which you can revive your memory. There is some element of truth to it, I'll explain. You may be wondering, what is Prabhuji talking about? When did Bollywood become the highest praman in India? Well, we'll come to that. So we know the storyline, what happens in every movie, right? So first, as you mentioned, the shock treatment, right? The person undergoes a lot of electric shocks and gradually and slowly the memory comes back, right? Likewise, all the sad experiences that we undergo, remember the frown face that we put up? Why does it happen? All the shocks that we get in the material world are kind of like that shock treatment that is happening. Just to remind us that we don't belong here. This is not our real identity. That which you think is real is not real. It is kind of like a wake-up call. But the thing is, the shock treatment is not very effective. Right? What works well in Bollywood? Those happy memories. Right? Remember, the hero meets an accident, he forgets his memory, he doesn't identify who the heroine is. Right? He just puts a blank face when he looks at her. But then what did she do? Yeah, before dancing, something else happens. She takes him to that same park, to the same location, she wears the same dress, she sings the same song, in the same tune. And then suddenly the memory comes back. Right? I know all the scenes are going on in your head right now. But there is a little element of Vedic truth behind this. The Bhagavad Gita explains that just like how revival of these happy memories is an effective way of treating amnesia than the shock treatment, the Bhagavad Gita also describes that one love song which the heroine sings for the hero to revive his memory, that love song is what we are holding in our hand. Bhagavad Gita. Right? It is a song divine. This is the original love song, the original cosmic love song which the Supreme Lord Himself is singing for us at every moment. It is right there in our hands. It's always accessible. Just by listening to this one love song, we can revive all our memories. Right? And along with the love song, you need the park. So we have a beautiful park here. Setting. Right? You need the right chorus for the song. We have the beautiful chorus right here. Right? You need the right music and the ambience, so it's all right here. So the whole principle, the whole crux of the Bhagavad Gita, remember our triangle here, which we saw earlier? There is one missing link, which we didn't complete. Right? That link between Jiva and Ishvara is what Bhagavad Gita defines as Bhakti Yoga. That is the secret hidden behind all these five elements. Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, Karma. The whole purpose ultimately is to revive this connection. So if you can see from this graphic that whether we know it or not, we are under the control of Ishvara. If we do not have this connection, we are under the control of Ishvara through the means of Kala. So the Jiva, whether it knows or not, it is always under the influence of Ishvara. Through Kal and Karma, But if you want to disconnect that root, which is a very painful root, the karshan, the sangharsh, remember? If you want to overcome that sangharsh, the best way is to get a direct connection with Ishwar through the loving process of bhakti yoga. That is the hidden secret, the hidden message, the hidden love song which is there in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? So the whole sum and substance of this Bhagavad Gita, this whole month, we have ample opportunity to keep singing this love song, to get mesmerized in this love song, to revive our love affair with Krishna. And not only that, you can invite more people in this love affair. Right? That is the whole mood behind this Bhagavad Gita book distribution. Right? It's not just about getting scores and the numbers are there. Right? But at the whole mood that Srila Prabhupada had when he wrote this Bhagavad Gita as it is, he wanted to give this love song as it is. Right? Sometimes the sound gets distorted, so you don't get the same loving feelings. Right? When the song comes as it is, then maximum love is produced in the heart. So this whole month, the Bhagavad Gita marathon that we like to involve ourselves with is ample opportunity for us to get absorbed in this wonderful service to Srila Prabhupada in spreading this love song, spreading this song which Gopinathji is constantly from his flute, this beautiful love song which is coming out in the form of the Bhagavad Gita. Right? And in conclusion, so this is what Lord Krishna promises. Tesham eva anukampartham aham agyanajam tamaha nashayami atma bhavasto jnana deepena bhashvata. So this agyan, this tamaha, this ignorance, this amnesia, which is born out of ignorance, Lord Krishna is promising that to show them special mercy, them are those who are engaging in this process of bhakti yoga, I dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So Krishna is promising that he will remove this amnesia from our heart. So do not worry. Ma suchaha. Right? Just distribute these books. First read these books, then distribute these books. Right? That is how it works, right? When you like something a lot, what do? You share it. You click the share button on Facebook. Right? So that is what we are doing. Right? We like Bhagavad Gita, we fall in love with Bhagavad Gita, and we distribute the joy of reading Bhagavad Gita with others. So we have ample opportunity in this month. So in summary, what we basically saw three essential points. First, we saw our acquired identity, which just leads to karshan, sangharsh. Then we saw our actual identity, where Krishna is saying, Mameva Amsha. We are Amsha, we are part and parcel of Krishna, we are Satchidananda, and the process of revival, the realizing our identity, is by listening to the love song, listening to Bhagavad Gita, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, coming in contact with devotees, engaging in all the various angas of devotional service, and so on and so forth. So if we can center our life based on these principles, then every moment of our life can be made sublime and joyful. Right? So these are just a few thoughts that I wanted to share. If there are any comments or questions, we'll take them before we move on to the next part of the Sunday Feast program. Any questions? Yes, Prabhu, we got a couple of questions here. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Prabhuji. As we deal in everyday's dealing with every other thing like energies and energetic, basically comprising of the short thing, we deal with energies and the source of that is energetic. Now in Vedas, as Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita that Mamaiva Amsa Jiva Loka Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, the Vaishnava philosophy describes it as spirit soul being the part and parcel of the Lord or eternal servant of the Lord, Dasharanandas. Because the soul is insignificant, and just because he is qualitatively one with the Lord, but the size is infinitesimally small, so very insignificant. So there's only one position that a conditioned soul can have as part and parcel of the Lord. Now if we take the analogy of a banyan fruit, which has a potentially banyan tree inside it, but only if it gets light and water and nourishment, I mean fertilizer, then only it can fructify as a tree.
Right.
But that cannot be said that at some point of time, that particular fruit or the seed was in the form of a tree. It mm-hmm. cannot be said like this.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, the living entity in the conditioned state cannot be said that at some point of time he was in the full form or full spiritual fledged form. It is in the conditioned life since eternity. The word used is not just Buddha, it is used Nitya Buddha or Anadi Bahirmukh. So, what would you comment on this?
Okay. So, to summarize the question, the nature of the conditioned soul is described as Nitya Buddha. So, does it mean it has always been this conditioned state? So, just to add more confusion to your question, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, while describing the Atma Tattva, Srila Prabhupada uses a very interesting phrase to describe the connection between Ishwar and Jiva, especially the Baddha Jiva. Prabhupada uses the phrase, eternally separated part and parcel. Now think carefully, this is a logical paradox here. When you say part and parcel, right, yani, at one point, they were together. This cup, this lid is part and parcel of this unit. Now, it has been separated. Right? But if they were never together, eternally separated means they both were never together. So how can it be part and parcel? Right? So here is a logical paradox. So that brings us about to the understanding, because that is the nature of the effect of time. We cannot think of a realm which is beyond the realm of time. The moment we enter into this bhautik jagat, jagat means that which is constantly undergoing a transformation. Why the transformation? Because of the influence of time. The moment we come under the influence of time, the concept of beginning and end comes about. So we cannot think of a realm beyond the purview of time. But this statement that Prabhupada made, eternally separated parts and parcel, right? So this gives us a hint about the nature of this Nitya Paddha. Yes, but then we are eternally separate parts and parcel. We have been eternally suffering, but as Bhagavad Gita promises, the suffering is not eternal. Among the five topics of the Bhagavad Gita, the karma, which is cause of suffering, is not eternal. It is a temporary element, which means the karma bandhan can be cut off. The cycle of the samsara chakra can be cut off. Then we are no more separated parts and parcels. We can come in loving union with Krishna in his spiritual abode as his servants. So that is the goal that we need to focus upon. Like that. Hope that throws some light on the subject matter. Okay. I think we have time for just one more question. Another person raised their hand there. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Prabhuji, why you use the term part and parcel and simply not a part? Just, I do not know, even Prabhupada has in, throughout his, this thing we use, we read part and parcel.
Right.
And whereas in whatever slide we saw, even the translation it says, you are my part.
Right.
So why is the term part and parcel?
Okay. So this is, the question is all clear. Why the term part and parcel? Now, this is somehow our unfortunate conditioning of not having English as our first language. Now, many of us, Prabhupada, if you carefully read his purports, he would use very, 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 very precise words. In fact, sometimes Prabhupada would stop his translations for days together for want of one particular word which would perfectly encapsulate the real meaning. So the phrase part and parcel in English means very similar to our understanding that we were just discussing, that it is very much an integral element. The part does not have a meaning without its connection with the source. Like for example, I have this kartal here. Okay? Now, what do you see right now? You don't see the ribbon, actually you are seeing the kartal. Because this ribbon is connected to the kartal, the ribbon also has the identity of kartal. So imagine you are looking for kartal somewhere, you just see the ribbon, what will you do? You will go there. And you will pick up the ribbon, you know the kartal is going to come out. But suppose if I disconnect this ribbon and just throw it somewhere on the street, does this ribbon have any value? Not at least as a kartal. Right? So part and parcel means that this ribbon, though distinct from this kartal, is part and parcel. It has its identity only in connection with this kartal. If it is disconnected, it is just a piece of waste cloth, which has no value. Likewise, the jiva also, when it is disconnected from Krishna, has no identity. It only has to struggle for its existence. But the moment we connect through this process of connection, which is bhakti yoga, the moment we connect, we attain fulfillment, we attain value in life. So that is the meaning of the word part and parcel. Right? See, this is the genius of Prabhupada. How he would use the perfect terms to encapsulate the right meaning, to convey the right meaning. Like that. So hope that satisfy you. Okay. Thank you very much. We are end of our time. Thank you very much for your patient listening. Please do join us every Sunday. We are having this whole series of talks. 3 more tattvas are there in our whole discussion. And please joyfully spread this love song in this whole month. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhagavat Vani Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai.
Thank you Nimai Lala Prabhu for this wonderful session on the Gita. On behalf of the temple authorities, Baldev Prabhu has asked me to